Joe Shuge from the University of Washington, Seattle, and he will be speaking on the failure of azithromycin treatment for urogenital gonorrhea in the United States verified by molecular typing methods.
Thank you. Good morning. I'll be talking about the use of molecular typing methods to investigate a case of azithromycin treatment failure. I'll start by talking about the background, which is the information of the patient. A 26-year-old MSM presented at Multnomah STD Clinic with symptoms of dysuria and urethral discharge. He reported having two male partners in the past 60 days, but he denied having any recent travel. The urethral specimen collected from the man demonstrated gram-negative intracellular diplococci. He reported having penicillin allergy and was treated with 2 grams azithromycin. His urethral specimen was positive for Neisseria gonorrhea by culture as well as by nucleic acid amplification test. Because he was treated with 2 grams azithromycin, he was encouraged to return if his symptoms do not resolve. Interestingly, he returned on day 12 because he didn't get better. There was no interim improvement in his symptoms, but he reported having no sex since his initial clinic visit. The urethral specimen from the man again demonstrated gram-negative intracellular diplococci by gram stain. This time around, it was retreated with 400 milligrams cefpodoxime plus 1 gram azithromycin. There were no subsequent symptoms or signs of medication allergy. The urethral specimen collected from the index patient, again, was positive for Neisseria gonorrhea by culture as well as by NAT. Now, the question here that we're trying to answer is, could this be a possible treatment failure or it was a re-exposure? The isolate collected from his first visit, which we call the pre-treatment isolate as well as the post-treatment isolate, were sent to UW as part of the GIST program. I don't have to talk about GIST because Mark already mentioned that, for antimicrobial susceptibility testing and molecular characterization. And we thought that by testing the isolate, we can know whether the MIC remained the same or to confirm whether this is a possible treatment failure or it was a re-exposure. The objective was to describe the use of molecular typing methods to investigate possible treatment failure or re-exposure. There are several methods that have been described in the literature for gonococcal typing, and the methods can be divided into two. There's the phenotypic methods, which is based on the expressed characteristics of Neisseria gonorrhea, and there's the genotypic methods. For those of us that are interested in learning about the various methods that are available for typing Neisseria gonorrhea, there's an excellent review written by UNEMO and Joanne Dillon in 2011. You can check that out. In general, phenotypic methods have limited use because they have low discriminatory ability. There's always problem with availability of reagents. They are time-consuming, and there's the requirement for high technical expertise. And I remember calling my folks at CDC, the Neisseria lab. I was wondering whether they could help me with the oxotyping for these two isolates. And they said, you know, SO, we used to do it, but we no longer do it. And when we stopped doing it, we said, RIP. And I said, I'm sorry. I said, I'm sorry to ask you for that. So the genotypic methods are preferred because they are more discriminatory, they are reproducible, and they are reliable. And for this study, we used the genotypic methods. Antimicrobial susceptibility testing was done by agar dilution. And the two typing methods that we use are NG-MAST and PFG. I'll start by talking about NGMAST. NGMAST stands for Neisseria gonorrhea multi-antigen sequence typing, which involves sequencing of two hypervariable genes, and there's a public database that is used for the sequence analysis. The different allele numbers are assigned to different POR as well as the TB genes, TBPB genes. Then the sequence type are assigned based on the allele combination. For instance, isolate P665, which is from Portland, has had an allele of 4 for the POR gene and an allele of 4 for the TBPB gene, and it was assigned ST225. The NGMAST has become very popular for gonococcal typing in the last decade, and the reason is because it's highly discriminatory and it's reproducible. We can use the NGMAST sequence type to compare sequence types all over the world. It has been successfully used to identify clusters of infection and strain, and there are published studies that have used the NGMAST to investigate treatment failures. But there are some disadvantages to the use of NGMAST. It's mostly used for culture specimens, so you need to get the bacteria growing. You need to grow Neisseria gonorrhea, and you need to extract the DNA, and you need to do the PCR. It has not been optimized for all types of specimen collected for NATS. PFG used to be the gold standard, widely used for bacteria typing as well as Neisseria gonorrhea typing. It works on the principle of lysing the entire bacteria genome in low-met agarose, then digesting by rear-cutting restriction at the nucleases, which will now give large DNA fragments that are separated by the PFG machine. PFG has been widely used for gonococcal typing. It can be used to type all gonococcal isolates, and it is reproducible. But unfortunately, it's becoming unpopular because it's relatively demanding, the machine is expensive, and it is time-consuming. For the results, we're looking at the pre-treatment and the post-treatment isolates. The MIC for all the drugs, except azithromycin, were the same. And if you look there in the red, the MIC for the pretreatment isolates, the azithromycin MIC was between 0.5 and 1, which increased to an azithromycin MIC of 8 for the post-treatment isolate. Interestingly, the sex partner, which had a rectal positive isolate, had MIC profiles that are different from the index patient. They both have the same sequence type. The pretreatment and the post-treatment isolate had the same sequence type, 3709. And also, very interestingly, the sex partner had a different sequence type and is actually a new sequence type that has not been previously described, 6683. There are a lot of questions going on here, and then we wanted to know how common is the subtype that we found in the index patient, the patient with failed azithromycin treatment. So we selected isolates collected between August, when the patient was seen, until December, and we looked at four isolates. Two of the isolates had MIC of 8, which is the MIC that we saw with the post-treatment isolate, and isolate with decreased susceptibility to azithromycin. And none of them looked the same. They were all different from the index patient. The slide shows the PFG using NHE1 enzyme, and if you look at lane 1 and 2, the patterns are the same. They are similar patterns, identical, indistinguishable, and was different from lane 3, which is another isolate collected in August, the same month that the patient was seen, but was not epidemiologically linked to the index patient. We further use SPE1 and BGL2 enzymes, separate digest, to increase our discriminatory power, and still the two isolate, the pretreatment and the post-treatment isolate, gave indistinguishable patterns. In summary, It's very interesting to note that the azithromycin MIC of the post-treatment isolates increased to an MIC of 8 during treatment. The pre- and the post-treatment isolates are indistinguishable by two genetic typing methods. The patient claimed that he did not have sex between visits, and all this suggests clinical failure of azithromycin and a possible selection of a variant of isolate with increased resistance to azithromycin. There are some limitations to this study. We cannot confirm whether this patient was actually re-exposed to the same gonococcal subtype by an untreated partner. And it's also possible that the patient was infected by two variants of the same isolate. One had an MIC of 0.5, and the other had an MIC of 8. The azithromycin treatment knocked out the variant with an MIC of 0.5, and the variant that had an MIC of 8 persisted, and when it came for the follow-up visit, that was the strain that was isolated. We do not have a way to confirm that. The other thing is there are limited data on the NGMAST and the PFG subtypes from isolate collected in Portland. So it's possible that this subtype that we saw in the pretreatment and the post-treatment isolate is commonly circulated, is widely circulated, is a dominant subtype in Portland, but we do not have any data on that. In conclusions, AST, NGMAST, and PFG are useful tools that can be used to investigate treatment failures. The routine use of azithromycin should be discouraged because it could rapidly breed or select resistance. If azithromycin monotherapy is prescribed, physicians are encouraged to do test of cure by culture or by NAT in 1 week, and if it is positive by NAT, GC positive by NAT, culture should be done for confirmation, and antimicrobial susceptibility testing should be performed. And I would like to thank my co-investigators, Bob, my friends from Portland, and my boss, King Gomes. And we receive funding from CDC. Thank you for keeping us in business.
I have a question.
Yes.
Could you talk a little bit about the challenges you've had in getting access to NGMAST and PFGE and how those tests were paid for?
Well, right now, CDC does not cover those tests.
Yes, that's why I'm asking.
But
what's your address?
So my address is SOGEO. You know. Well, we love what we do. What CDC provides is the phenotypic testing, which is the AST by agar dilution. And there's no genotypic work that can be done without you having the phenotypic results. So because we're grateful to CDC for providing us funding for the AST, we also wanted to do an extra work by doing the genotypic testing, characterizing the isolate, and trying to explain mechanisms of resistance. The challenge we have about funding, it's common. It's the same challenge everywhere, but we think these are challenges that are surmountable, and we try our best by collaborating with drug companies that have some money and companies that are diagnostic companies that want to, they are developing new methods, and that's the money we use for our genotypic research.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a nice job, Matt Golden, UW. So I had a question for you, whether you would want to speculate on this, or, and maybe this is something Kim wants to talk about later, is when we're treating people with 2 grams of azithro who are penallergic, do you think we should give them concurrent doxy as a second drug? I mean, we've elected to do this now with ceftriaxone, which is probably a much better agent. So it would seem to me that the reason to do it with the azithro would be stronger, if anything.
I agree with you. Thank you.
Nicely done, SO. It's actually quite easy to select spontaneous mutants to azithromycin in the lab. We've done it quite often. So it's not a very good drug for gonorrhea. And you touched on it with the mono treatment. And second, CDC does run NGMAST, just not in the GISP laboratory. I'm actually the one that pushed Will and King to start using it. So we do it at CDC. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we have one more question.
Comment again, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm kind of a clinician guy, not really academic.
Could you speak into the microphone?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks.
Comment more than a question. It follows up on the comment another gentleman made about treating with doxy in addition to Zithro. That one I'm not crazy about. It's too much medicine. But I was wondering if we could call these patients back for a test of cure sooner. You know, rather than saying if you have persistent symptoms, it's about follow-up of patients who were just treated with 2 grams of Zithromax.
Well, I think Doug will answer to that from Portland because is Doug here? Yeah. So the standard practice in Portland is to have patient come back for a test of cure in a week?
I'm not sure about the time period, but that
okay.
Is the practice now.
That is the practice now, yeah.
That's the protocol.
So the protocol now is the patients are asked to come back in 1 week. Thank you.
I think 2 weeks is too soon. If you use NATS, I think you're going to still get a lot of false positives. We use 3 months, so maybe 6 weeks, 4 weeks, something like that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.